Welcome inside the Waterloo Radio Laurier Studios here. Almost, I was going to say the heart of Uptown Waterloo. We're not quite in the heart of Uptown Waterloo, but we're getting there. And Uptown Waterloo got a lot of action last night. Of course, last night being Halloween, hope you all partied safely and maturely. And of course, those celebrations will continue tonight, of course, Friday night and over into Saturday night. Big Halloween weekend here on Laurier campus and throughout Waterloo. Also, Diwali celebrations throughout this weekend. So it's a big weekend to start November. Of course, it's the first of the month here on Gold and Bold. November 1st edition of Gold and Bold. And November 1st, also day after Halloween, that's All Saints Day here today. It's also Antigua and Barbuda's Independence Day.
Happy Independence Day.
Happy Independence Day from Britain, I think, early in the 80s. I'm not sure about that. It's National Sports Fan Day, so great. We have a sports show here.
Yeah, good stuff.
I'm still going down the list. National Deep Fried Clams Day. I don't think I've ever had a deep fried clam.
Me neither. Can't say I have.
Love Your Lawyer Day. So big day for insufferable people.
Shout out to my lawyer.
And then World Vegan Day. Of course, my partner Zach here. Zach, you adhering to any veganism?
No, sir. I had four tacos for lunch. Four beef tacos.
You're really canceling them out, aren't you? I'm trying to hear to a strict vegetarian. I eat chicken.
Interesting.
And beef. I eat raw game.
Oh, interesting.
And of course, a big week in the sports world, of course. Probably the most major, of course, the World Series, Zach.
That's right.
Coming to an end. Dodgers 4-1 series victory over the New York Yankees in New York State. Zach, who were you cheering for that? Were you a Dodgers guy or a Yankees guy?
Neither. I did not want either of them to win.
That's the good perspective.
I was
on
hoping
it.
For an asteroid to strike the stadium.
Cheering for the meteorite.
Go Meteors.
Man. We're close to it. Unfortunately, not, of course, the two huge spenders in huge market teams, of course, make it to the World Series in the LA Dodgers and New York Yankees. And we'll just kind of dive right into that real quick. We might discuss it later on. Of course, the phone line later on the show will be open. We'll see if we get some, but if we don't get a chance to discuss it with our callers, we'll gloss over it here. Of course, that was a 7-6 victory, come from behind win by the Dodgers two nights ago on October 30th in game 5 of that series. That fifth inning from the Yankees was one of, you know, the most memorable mid-game meltdowns in baseball history.
I believe they're up 5 runs.
Up 5 runs, winning 5-0 halfway, a little more than halfway through the game, and the infield gaffes were, you know, astounding to let Dodgers get 5 and get back into it. Of course, yeah, the Yankees up 5-0 in that fifth inning, and it was one of those series. Of course, it's only a 5-game series, but a lot happened in those 5 games. It almost felt like a 7-game series, even though the Dodgers, you know, did quick work of the Yankees. It was one of those 5-game series that felt like a 7-game series because, you know, the first game theatrics and drama from Freddie Freeman, of course, and then Ohtani with the shoulder injury. Yep. You had the Yankees fans ripping the glove and the ball out.
Yeah, you love to see the passion from the fans on that. If the team's not going to do it, the fans will.
That's, you know, average Yankees fan moment.
Average Yankees
right
fan.
Like, that's why I cannot. Actually, you know what? I actually do kind of like the Yankees. As I was like growing up as a kid, I liked the Yankees. They had a cool pinstripe uniform, and they're like, you know, kind of
classic.
Like kind of like the Leafs or Canadians, where they have like they won a lot of championships, a lot of history behind them. You know, I was a big Derek Jeter guy growing up. A-Rod, I liked. But the fan base for the Yankees, controversial fan base to say the least. But of course, so we'll cover the World Series later on, of course. Big day in the professional sports world. Big day on campus and big weekend on campus for sports, Zach.
Yeah, absolutely. OUA semifinals. The Laurier Golden Hawks will be playing against Queens, led, of course, by Taylor Algersma, quarterback, most efficient quarterback in the OUA, as well as a rushing attack spearheaded by Tanner Nelms, who's averaging 6.1 yards per carry, which is insane.
Oof. And of course, yep, that is OUA semifinals action tomorrow, University Stadium, home game for us Golden Hawks. So hope you are all getting your tickets and making it out there. Of course, the Golden Hawks, we have a great student fan base here at Laurier. Absolutely. And we always show up for the big games. And of course, that should be no different tomorrow, as it's OUA semifinals action. Of course, Laurier, such a strong regular season, Zach. Of course, they got one of the byes past the quarterfinals due to them being on top of the OUA West Division. Of course, that's 1 p.m. game start, OUA semifinals. The Queens Gales at your Wilfrid Laurier Golden Hawks here at University Stadium. Make sure to get your tickets, as Taylor Elgersma and the Golden Hawks look to punch their way into the Yates Cup final for OUA football glory November 9th. So have to get through this game tomorrow, and of course, then they'll make it to the Yates Cup. But that's saying, Queens Gales are also a strong team. Of course, every single time we've had this radio show, we always talk about how strong the Golden Hawks football program is. At worst, they've been ranked number 2 nationally. And of course, that's their rank this week. And they've been up at number 1 alone. They've been tied at number 1. This is a very strong Laurier team with national recognition. Of course, they're at number 2 U Sports nationally ranked. Of all, not just OUA, of all universities. Of course, just behind another terrific football program who's been up at top all year down in Montreal. And of course, the Queens Gales, though, the visiting Queens Gales for the OUA semifinals tomorrow. They're number 8 nationally ranked. Of course, they're no slouch either. They're 6-3 on the season. Laurier, of course, undefeated, 8-0. Of course, that 6-3 includes a victory, of course, last week. Of course, they played in the quarterfinals. They beat Windsor Lancers in Windsor by a close score of 22-19 in the OUA quarterfinals to earn this matchup against your Golden Hawks. And of course, that's not the only OUA football semifinals. Of course, semifinals, that means there has to be two. Of course, the second semifinals is occurring at the same time. That's between Guelph and Western in Western, of course, at the Western Alumni Stadium. Of course, Western got the bye as well into the semifinals. And the Guelph Griffins, of course, earned their way into the OUA semifinals by beating the Ottawa GGs, of course, 26-15 in the quarterfinals last week at home in Guelph. So a great weekend for OUA football. And of course, moving to the basketball front, Zach, I know you get to call one of the home openers tonight for one of the basketball teams.
Yep, the Laurier women's basketball team taking on Ottawa tonight at 6 p.m.
Of course, the men's team following that up at 8 p.m. It's always nice on campus because the basketball teams play in the same venue, and basketball games are, you know, 2 hours, an hour and a half long. So we are able, most if not every home game from the women's and men's basketball team are consecutive. They're right after each other.
Doubleheader.
They're doubleheaders, which is great because, you know, you get two kind of almost for the price of one.
For sure.
As, yeah, you walk in, it's a good way to spend an evening, 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. 6 p.m. The women's game is usually earlier, and then the main event, the men's, they'll play at 8 p.m. And of course, both teams tonight, home opener, and of course, the first game of the regular season as they face the Ottawa GGs. Of course, both programs off to different starts in the preseason. Of course, the women's preseason, 6 preseason games, they went 3-3. And of course, the men's preseason went 8-0. So, Zach, a great basketball program's going on there.
Yeah. A lot of hope for both teams this year.
Of course. And again, they're against U Ottawa GGs, which I only recently found. I'm looking at, a lot of cool university names, I think Golden Hawks pretty cool. I like the Guelph Griffins a lot.
Yeah,
Griffins, that's alliteration, right? Mm-hmm. Western Mustangs are classic.
Yeah.
Windsor Lancers, I like. Trent Excalibur's not so much. TMU Bold is named after a Microsoft Word choice. But you, Ottawa GGs, I didn't know this. I was Googling, why are they called the GGs, of course? You know, back in the day, a lot of university and, like, collegiate teams were named after, like, the color that they wore.
Is that right?
You know, back in, like, the 1800s or, like, early 20th century, they're all, you know. And think of it, that's more of, like, a rugby or, like, a European, like, soccer football tradition.
Yeah, where the All Blacks.
All Blacks, the Reds, right. Stuff like that. And the GGs, of course, back way back when, of course, their colors were garnet and gray. Mm. And oh wait, garnet and gray, GNG, Ottawa right. GGs, yeah. Morphed into the GGs. That's a bit of a history on the visitors tonight for the home openers. And of course, a good thing about, you know, GGs, garnet, gray, GGs is also a GG also has links to horse racing in across the pond in the United Kingdom, where a GG is the first horse out of the starting gate. So they kind of molded that in the GGs. That's why the GGs kind of have the horse on their logo. So they kind of morphed the garnet and gray into a horse kind of tradition to horse racing. So that's kind of interesting. I found I was curious why they're called the GGs. And now I'm like, oh, you know what? That's kind of a weird name, but I appreciate that name now. I like it. And of course, the Ottawa aforementioned GGs, of course, coming to campus here at the Athletic Complex Gym, home opener and first game of the regular season for both men's and women's basketball teams. Of course, men's basketball team had a strong season last year, new coaching staff this year, and their preseason went 8-0. Very strong preseason from the guys on the court. But of course, that saying 8-0 preseason, of course, there's a tournament in there, the Concordia Classic, and they went 0-3 in.
Interesting.
So outside of that tournament, they're undefeated. But in that tournament, they cannot get a win in their three games. And of course, interestingly, during the tournament, these were like significant. They weren't like 1, 2, 3 point losses. There was like a 71, like 49 loss in there.
Wow.
And these are like 20 point losses. But of course, the last game they played in that tournament was a 78-87 loss against McMaster. Interesting. Of course, McMaster's in OUA. So, of course, that is interesting. Even more interesting is their last preseason game, the most recent one they played, and the one to close out their preseason, they won against McMaster. So maybe it's that tournament environments. Yep. Maybe they're all away. They're in Montreal. Maybe they weren't feeling too hot there. They lost against McMaster there. And then back during regular preseason, they get another chance to face them. And they win to close out their preseason this past Sunday in women's basketball. Of course, they're against U Ottawa too. They went 3-3, but in their tournament, their preseason tournament, outside of the preseason games, it was the 36th annual Darcel Wright Memorial Classic, hosted by TMU there down at the Mattamy Athletic Center in Toronto. And of course, they went 2-1 in that tournament. So the men's program weak during their preseason tournament, and the women's program quite strong in that preseason tournament.
Yeah, as the intensity ramps up during the regular season and into the playoffs this year, we'll see how both teams respond. Of course, you mentioned men's basketball 0-3 in the Concordia Classic, and we'll see if they can, as it gets more competitive as the year goes by, if they can get that record in more competitive environments into the win column.
Definitely, and you know, as sports fans, this can kind of be applied to most sports, regardless of level of sport. It's always like the preseason's always it's a different animal, right? It's not as intense as regular season. Same way as playoffs are a different animal. You know, the intensity is, there's a definitive line between preseason, regular season, mm-hmm. playoff, and like even championship competition. So as sports fans, you don't want to put too much weight into the preseason. But if your team's doing really good, you kind of want to put a lot of weight into the preseason. You're like, if they keep this up, they got momentum. They're undefeated. Yeah. They'll be undefeated during the regular season too. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, no. So we can't become too much weight on the preseason. But it's always nice when your preseason does well.
Yep.
Because that's showing that you're firing right off the gate and you don't really have any growing pains mm-hmm. to worry about as you head into the regular season. But of course, for the teams who don't do that well in the preseason, it's not a huge deal. Oftentimes, those are teams, you know, with maybe a newer program or newer recruits or new coaching staff that are kind of working out the kinks. So preseason, again, doesn't count for standings at all. It's a good way to get your kinks out. But that being said, the men's basketball program here at Laurier, an undefeated preseason in preseason action, of course, with 8-game preseason. That's a large preseason. And to be able to confidently vanquish all your opponents, that's a good look as you head in to tonight's 8 p.m. home opener on campus, of course, at the Athletic Complex Gym, which is a great venue for basketball. It's also very handy to be on campus. I know for the hockey team and lesser thing, the football team's on University Stadium, which is literally like half a minute walk away from campus,
right,
just across
the
road down on Seagram. The Memorial Recreational Complex for the hockey teams, it's a bit further away.
It's a little trek.
But it's also just like, again, it's just like maybe 10 minutes through Waterloo Park.
Yeah,
which is a good walk,
it's
too.
It's a pretty park.
This time of year, you know, with the leaves changing. The animals are away, though, unfortunately. You get a chance to see the animals there?
Oh, I actually didn't. It was pretty vacant as I was making my walk through last time.
Yeah. Yeah, early, I think during September, of course, they have like a mini, like, not a petting zoo, but like a animal display enclosure there at Waterloo Park with goats and like maybe a chicken or something like that. Not actual like, nothing exotic because it's not, the most, it's not a big production. But they have fences there and they have like goats and donkeys or, other beasts in there, which is always fun to walk by. But yeah, so basketball home openers tonight. And they also play again a Saturday night too.
They
of
do.
Course. So their first two regular season games are both at home. Home opener tonight. Make sure you get your tickets tonight and get your tickets tomorrow night because they'll be in action again, both women's and men's basketball teams. And of course, the football team on campus, OUA semifinals tomorrow at 1 p.m. Make sure to tune in on that. And the hockey teams, of course. Women's hockey was in action last night. There at the Memorial Recreational Complex, a big 1-0 win. Of course, tied 0-0 at Bagels throughout the first two periods. And about halfway through the first third period, Abby Glandon, the rookie, with her second goal of the season. And it was the only goal of that game as Laurier, kind of an upset victory over the Guelph visiting Guelph Griffins, who, of course, found themselves at the top of the OUA West Division and were a juggernaut last year, easily on top of the West Division for OUA women's hockey last year. So a bit of an upset victory for the Golden Hawks, which is always great to see. Of course, they improved to 4-1-0-1. Of course, those four column records, of course, wins, losses, overtime losses, and then shootout losses. So women's hockey, 4-1-0-1, and then men's hockey, 2-2-2-0. So two is across the board, except for shootout losses. For men's hockey, as those seasons are still in their infant stages, of course, it's a 27
just getting started
ish game season, and they're 5-6 games in. And of course, women's next home games for Laurier Sports, of course, other than basketball and football this weekend, of course, next week and Friday and Saturday night, you got a doubleheader for the women's hockey. So if you're not free this weekend, maybe you're free next week to get a couple tickets. Go down to the rec complex, watch some really good hockey. I was impressed from the women's team last night and the visiting Guelph Griffins too. It was quality hockey. It was always great to see.
That women's team is actually looking very good to start the season off the back of goaltender Kayla Renault with a 97 save percentage.
Actually
to start the
absurd.
Season.
Kayla Renault, of course, as a starting goaltender, of course, I've covered really until, of course, this is my first year as sports manager. And of course, the last couple years, I've just been a sports volunteer. And for my first 2 years as sports volunteer, I was like really solely doing women's hockey games. I was always late to sign up with the schedule. And then so all the ones that are only filled for, it was women's hockey. And so I just take those. Mm-hmm. And so I've been around the women's hockey program for a couple years. So that's what I know most about. And of course, Acadia Carlson, the past couple years, is a starting goaltender for these Golden Hawks, these Lady Golden Hawks on the ice. And she's injured. She's on the IR. She's not starting this season. Backup, Kayla Renault, comes in and looking to steal Carlson's job when she comes back because Renault has been absolutely fantastic to start the season. Has two shutouts now, including the one last night, a 970 save percentage thereabout. Has I think five starts, 4-1 in those, or 4-5-0 in those starts. Including the shootout loss. And, of course, Caitlin Ratneau is the other Golden Hawks goaltender who's had to start. Only started one game. And, of course, in that one game, she gave up 3 goals on 8 shots, got pulled early in the second period, and then Ratneau goes back in the pipes and puts up 15 saves on 15 shots.
Wow.
So Ratneau struggled out of the gate, and then Ratneau came in, relieved her quite effectively, and then has just had every start since. So Kayla Renault, very, very strong start the season. Great shout to her. One shout out Abby Glandon too. The rookies had 2 goals on this young campaign so far, including an assist. Other rookies, too, to mention on that Lady Golden Hawks team.
Clara Chisholm.
Clara Chisholm, I was going to say, a goal and assist, too, for 2 points early on in this campaign. Sydney Brooks, of course, who, of course, Mark Perry, the play-by-play man last night, mentioned a lot on the broadcast. She was around the puck. And Roussel, who I've been very impressed with, of course, on the D-line for Roussel. No points on the season, but, of course, she's a defensive end player. And I remember I got to call the game play-by-play with Connor Gaudette a couple weeks ago when the Queens Gales were visiting in that 4-2 victory for the Golden Hawks. And I was saying Roussel probably more than anyone else on the ice. For a rookie on the defensive end, she makes great defensive plays and also like isn't afraid to shoot the puck. So shout out to her. Two, as we were getting into 1:24 p.m. on this drizzly Friday afternoon, November 1st. And, of course, Zach, how's it going for professional sports?
Professional sports, I guess we should start with the World Series. Of course, the Dodgers, as previously mentioned, cleaning up in five games. Ohtani getting his first ring in his first year with the Dodgers.
Could have been in Toronto.
Could have been Toronto. He could have been on that plane, yeah. Man. He could have been on that plane.
The whole city stopped to look at, like, flight radar, yep. Which was, like, wild.
Mm-hmm. I remember being in class watching the plane go over Ohio, waiting for Ohtani to touch down.
He's on that plane. He's touching down.
But nope, it was Dragon's Den Star.
And, of course, Freddie Freeman, of course, what a series he had getting World Series MVP, rightfully so. A terrific series from him. And of course, Kevin Kiermaier gets his ring. Kevin Biggio gets a ring too as part of the Dodgers franchise. So, of course, those are former Blue Jays players. So, congratulations to them. Great to see former Blue Jays players get success, knowing that the current ones doesn't look like they'll be able to get some anytime soon because that is a mismanaged organization with not a lot of. Top end talent, of course, excluding the big names. Vladimir Guerrero, of course, had a great second half to the season. Of course, the Blue Jays, nowhere near a World Series, nonetheless, didn't even make the playoffs this year. Of course, they haven't really been able to really sniff the playoffs the last couple years. They've been able to get the wild card games, but lost every single one of them. It's been a rough go if you're a Blue Jays fan, but don't worry, they got more renovations. So. You know, there's that to look forward to. And, of course, in the NHL, of course, the Leafs make a trade this past week. Give me a sec here.
We have a trade to announce.
We have a trade to announce. Of course, that's Timothy Liljegren, of course, defender for the Leafs, traded to the San Jose Sharks, the bottom-feeding San Jose Sharks. For a couple draft picks and Matt Benning. So they swapped defensemen. Of course, Matt Benning, less, you know, heralded less than Timothy Liljegren, less NHL ready. So Toronto also, with Matt Benning, do get a third round draft pick and a sixth round draft pick, notably not next year, but in 2026. So two extra picks going their way in 2 years' time in swapping Timothy Liljegren for Matt Benning, of course. Matt Benning was a third-round pick in the most recent NHL draft. That's a lie. I misread that paragraph. It's confusing. It's like a third-round pick in the 2025 NHL draft, and I'm like, that hasn't happened yet. I'm like, oh, wait, no, that's also what he was traded for, of course.
It's interesting for a trade to happen so early in the season. Could you maybe give us some insight into what was maybe going on in the front office there?
It is strange, but Timothy Liljegren, the Leafs really boldened their blue line this past year because that's been a point of you know why they haven't had a lot of success was their defending, and so they tried to really improve their defending line and they made some trades and they made some signings. Jake McCabe, of course, signed a new deal recently. Chris Tanev signed in the offseason. Oliver Ekman-Larsson signed in the offseason. And Timothy Liljegren, you know, he was heralded, you know, just maybe, you know, 5 years ago as being one of, defender to really, a prospect defender to look out for league-wide. Of course, hype was big on him. He had big potential. Him and Rasmus Sandin, of course, think 5 years ago at the start of COVID, were being positioned to be the next two big leading defenders for the Leafs for years to come. And since then, last year, Rasmus Sandin got traded. This year, Timothy Liljegren got traded. So it's, you know, and Liljegren's 25 years old now, of course. He's, you know, not that young anymore. And I guess maybe they didn't see enough development from him. But they also didn't really give him positions to develop. He was often on the third pair. He never really got lots of power play time. So it looks like they're just trying to move on, give him a fresh sense. But that it's Timothy Liljegren. You know, he's been for the Leafs organization for a while. At one time, he was being heralded as the next, you know, franchise defender for these Leafs. And to see him traded away for Matt Benning and a pair of draft picks shows, I guess, the Leafs are quite, you know, as much as draft picks kind of imply you're looking for, you know, more draft picks in the future. Liljegren just no spot on this lineup, and so change of scenery, and they're kind of in a win-now mode where they kind of need to trim the excess and give opportunities to the ones they've signed bigger contracts to. Of course, Chris Tanev, Ulrich Melanson signing contracts, and they're getting old. Ekman Larson and Tanev, of course. I think Chris Tanev's maybe 34. He's been around the league for a while. He's handed like a four-year, five-year contract, which carry him to like 38, 39, 40 years old. Ekman Larson is close to the same age. He was handed a multi-year contract too. So Leafs are definitely relying, not to say anything, like not they're good players. Chris Tanev's probably one of my top five players in the league for a while now. So I'm really glad Leafs got him because he's an excellent defensive defender. Maybe the best defensive defender in the league, arguably, which the Leafs need. And Ekman Larson is one of the more offensive defenders, and he can kind of man the power play and stuff like that. And he's a good quarterback there. He's had experience, of course, in Arizona or Phoenix at the time, actually, mainly quarterbacking their power play. So Ekman Larson's good signing, but signed for a while, and he's old. Chris Tanev, great signing, signed for a while, and he's getting old. So at least definitely in win now mode.
Yeah, well, if you see your window, you're willing to mortgage your future a little bit win in that next 2-3 years. And I just hope they can make it past the second round. The Cup has been very elusive for the Leafs this past
like
five decades.
Especially north of the border in general, of course. Canadian team hasn't won Lord Stanley's Chalice since 1993, Montreal Canadiens.
Yikes.
And, like, it was common. It's strange. There's less teams, too, but it was common for Canadian teams to win the Cup. Think of, you know, I mean, Leafs 67 was the last time they won. But as you head into the 70s, the Canadiens had a dynasty in the 70s, of course, headed by Ken Dryden and Guy Lafleur and Vaughn Cournier and all those. And then throughout the 80s, you got the Oilers dynasty, Gretzky, Messier, Curry, Coffey, Anderson, Lowe, Fur, all those Hall of Famers too. And then, of course, you got a Calgary Flames, my personal favorite team. So you got a Flames Cup in 1989. And then you got a Canadiens Cup in 1993. So it's like, all right, we should be expecting more Canadian teams to win. Then Gary Bettman became commissioner, and then no Canadian teams have won since then. Not to say no Canadian teams have went to the final. Mm-hmm. Of course, Canucks went to the final against the Rangers in 1994. Canucks moment. Canucks also went to the finals in 2011 against the Bruins. Certified Canucks moment. That was a funny moment. That was like my first. I was also like, I'm an 03. And so like that 10-11 season was like my main like first time really being conscious of like hockey and all that. And like being a fan. So that's the season I remember in the Bruins winning that Game 7. That's something I remember quite vividly. And of course, Vancouver being burnt to the ground after that. That was a good moment in sports. I dismissing, city destruction as a good moment is a decision, but I stand by it. The Oilers went to the finals last year and in 2006. Of course, losing to the Panthers and Hurricanes, respectively. Flames, the 2004, it was in. I don't want to get into it. End up losing to the Tampa Bay Lightning in 7 to Montreal Canadiens, of course, and then in the bubble season, went to the finals against the Lightning, who Carey Price basically carried them to that finals, and unfortunately were not able to get that cup. So it's been like Canadian teams have had chances, But they've been just on the losing end of every single one for the past 21 years.
There was so much hope in this past finals when they forced that game seven.
That was a wild comeback from the Oilers, too. Yeah. I was, like, legitimately, like, okay, I was excited. Like, yeah. I knew, like, I'm a pessimist at nature. So, like, whenever a team I cheer for is doing well, I can't believe it. But, like, the Oilers are playing so strong after going down 3-0 to tie back up 3-3 in a seven-game series. Like, it could happen. And, like, a lot of people were saying it was going to happen. They have all the momentum. They've been playing so well. Bobrovsky's cooked. And then that game seven is just a low. The Oilers were held to low shots. It was an uneventful game. And Sam Reinhart for the Panthers with that winning goal in, like, the second period. So it was a very uneventful game seven. Very tense.
Yeah.
But from the shooting gallery, that was all the games in the previous series, previous games in the series. It was kind of a flat ending to the Oilers' hope and all of Canada's hope there. But any, are you a big hockey guy?
I wouldn't say so. No. Not really.
Do you have a favorite team?
I guess the Leafs, unfortunately.
I know, it's always, you kind of got to cheer for the Leafs.
That's where I kind of default to since I'm a little bit of a casual.
Oh, it makes sense. It's a local team. Yeah, right. Geographically, it's closer, so you kind of want to see them win.
Oh, but have you seen the those videos of McDavid after, I believe, game three of the finals?
Yeah, I did see that.
Telling his team to dig in.
It's good. It's always interesting to see those locker room videos.
Yeah, behind closed doors. We never really see that side of hockey players.
Because hockey players, again, very reserved, very professional.
Yeah, I feel like we've had this conversation. Yeah.
Throwback. That's a through line.
Yeah, we really saw, like, Connor McDavid lose his top against, like, his team in the locker room, yelling at his team to dig in, and then in the finals, after game seven, you saw him, like, crying in the locker room. So it's like, that was my first time really seeing any hockey players really that emotional with their guys, because with the reporters, they're very respectful, reserved, stick to the script, very PR trained.
Yeah, very, very PR trained. And it's, I'm hoping we see a bit more personality, of course, from hockey players, of course. We're at the halfway point into the station. So we shall, I might try to get a caller on the line. We'll see if this works. It worked last time after a couple tries at it. Of course, me and Kevin, well, I was trying to figure it out. And eventually got it working. And my elementary school tech team skills finally got to work on the soundboard. And I figured it out. And we'll see if we can figure this call out. Same guys last week, of course. We're going to call in about the World Series for a bit. We might get another caller or not. If not, we'll keep online for him for a bit. But we also get off after a while. It's not his show. It's ours. But as we wait for him to call in, there it is. We shall see if it works.
How's it going?
Oh. Oh, that was quick.
It worked.
Last time it took like 17 years for us to work. This time it works on the first try. That was a seamless transition. Of course, calling in is our resident baseball analyst, Jackson Lee. And of course, we're discussing the World Series, Jackson. Of course, what were your opinions of the entire playoffs?
The entire playoffs. Well, I'll tell you what, baseball is one of those things. Well, all sports playoffs are essentially a crapshoot, but I think baseball sits at the top of that, where you really never know what you're going to see. And this year, I had no idea what we were going to see. I did not think the Yankees would be out in five games, but I didn't think they were going to win the fourth one by the time we got there. But it was just all across the board. Didn't think the Mets were going to go as far as they did. I didn't think Detroit was even going to be there when the year started.
Yeah, so, the Detroit run, I was very impressed with, of course. I'm a big Tigers fan, so I appreciated it. But that World Series final two nights ago, Jackson, that was something to watch. The Yankees blew it. What a meltdown.
Honestly, it makes me look at the team, like the structure of the Yankees as a whole, because you were just talking about the Edmonton Oilers, and I think there is actually a bit of comparison there, because the big issue with Edmonton was that their stars kind of fell asleep in the finals. You know, McDavid wasn't doing much, Drysdale wasn't doing much, and you saw the same thing with the Yankees a bit. They really rely on Aaron Judge and Juan Soto, and I mean, who wouldn't? They're two of the best players, maybe the two best players in baseball right now, so you would obviously expect him to be playing well. And when Judge wasn't, it was like the whole team wasn't. There was really no offense there at all. I think by the time game three was finished, Freddie Freeman had actually put up more offense for the Dodgers than the entire Yankees roster combined. It just, everything seemed to fall out of place for the Yankees. And it was, as a Jays fan, it was fun to watch, but I can imagine that was very, very painful for the city of New York.
Yep.
I'd imagine, of course. And you mentioned Freddie Freeman, of course, getting World Series MVP and an absurd postseason for Freddie Freeman. Shohei Ohtani, didn't really... he did some stuff in the finals, especially that first game, but of course, it was not the Shohei show in the finals.
It was not. No, it was the Freddie Freeman Mookie Betts show, which I love to see. I think both of those guys deserve it as much as anybody in the league. But you're right. I was on last week here, and I said that getting to see something like Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani, the two best guys in the show, facing each other off, and neither of them did a thing. And it's a weird one, you know?
You know, we all piped it up, the media and everyone online. It's like, oh, Ohtani versus Judge, you know, the two best players in the league going at it in this World Series. Nothing better. And then they both aren't the factors. I guess Judge arguably the factor that helped the Yankees lose, a negative factor, of course, because his batting average, of course, 133, and dropping that fly ball. Judge did, of course, get that home run, but Aaron Judge was not the offensive catalyst that we've known him to be.
Yeah, and as a team, like especially deep into the playoffs, you really begin to rally around your top guys. And so when your top guys are kind of slumping a little bit, your team kind of goes back into its shell and they're not playing as free as they were throughout the playoffs. When
definitely. And we saw the Dodgers
hitting the socks off.
Yeah, exactly. The Dodgers, we just saw the depth that they had. I mean, I know on the broadcast last night, Sportsnet was listing the players that weren't playing. They were on the IR for any reason. And that could be an entire starting rotation just of pitchers who weren't playing. So mm-hmm. the depth of the Dodgers really show was broadcasted well throughout the series. The Yankees' depth was more of, you mentioned the Oilers, you know, the Dreisaitl and McDavid, in this case, Yankees, Soto, and Judge, where if your offense isn't being, funneled through those two players, you're not getting any offense, Jackson.
Absolutely. No, I think part of the whole captain thing for Aaron Judge really almost hurts his team, because if I'm on that team, again, I don't know what it's like to be a Major League Baseball player facing down Walker Buehler or Clayton Kershaw, but the way I see it is I'm on that team, I'm hitting sixth or seventh or whichever, and I see Aaron Judge and Juan Soto just putting up absolutely nothing. I'm thinking, well, those guys are superstars. What the heck am I supposed to do, right?
Yeah, it's
an interesting concept to look at, and that's why I don't like the idea of a captain in baseball.
Yeah.
Because I think because everybody in the sport of baseball, it's just how it works. Everyone's going to slump. And when your guy is slumping, it sucks. And if he's also your de facto team leader, it's just going to suck even more.
I would like to quote a tweet that you sent a couple days ago. In 2020, Aaron Judge's girlfriend, now wife, Samantha Braxseek, was arrested for extreme DUI in Arizona.
Extreme.
Administered two breathalyzer tests at the police station. Her readings of 0.169 and 0.181 were both far higher than Judge's World Series batting average of 1.30 or 1.133, which is wild, especially when he's supposed to be, he is arguably the greatest hitter in today's game. And for that to have completely no effect on his team in the World Series, and the Yankees just kind of did not have anything. And of course, the only thing they really had going for them was fan interference.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that like the day after he was getting appearances on talk shows or what was it, podcasts and John Boy and all that.
Boy moment.
New York culture. I don't know if that's what we're going to call it, but that was just, I don't even know how to put that. That upset me deeply as a fan of the sport. That I don't know. I just, I think back, like, I don't know if you remember, 2015, I believe, was Texas Rangers and Toronto Blue Jays, and a fan threw a beer can at one of the Texas outfielders.
Mm. I remember that now, yeah.
That, to me, again, I would have been much younger and I hadn't experienced it, but that was abhorrent. So now to see something like that go to just such an extremely different level, so much worse, because if I'm Mookie Betts and that happens, that's just... that's unacceptable. I don't even know how to put it into words, because it's just something I've never seen before.
It's like, maybe it's, you know, we've seen that the past couple years, and like it's just like the entitlement of some fans, I guess, who like think, you know, that they can just do this and then like expect no consequences and just like, oh yeah, I'll just get involved with the game. You've seen a lot of you know, fans get involved in games, and you've seen in the regular season the past couple years, coming out of COVID, when fans got back into the stadium, it's like no one really knew how to behave themselves, and they're grabbing balls, trying to grab balls out of outfielders' hands, taking them before they can hit the glove on home run opportunities. It's just fans, you know, it's, and again, the Yankees fans, of course, just 2 games ago, that was wild to see. And then, like, they got caught for it. And then after, they're like, oh, no, it was, like, they're trying to, like, explain themselves and trying to defend it as if what they're doing is actually, like, legal. And I'm like, that is peak Yankees fans.
Yeah, you put your whole hand in his glove.
Yeah, and then you're trying to take his glove off, too, while you're at it. I'm like, sir, that's, no. Like, what are we doing here? Of course, everyone online is also like, he could have been injured, right?
Yeah.
Imagine Mookie Betts, like,
wrist,
you know,
over the wall.
Yeah, sprained a finger or a wrist on that play. That'd be, like, series-changing. That'd be absurd.
Absolutely, yeah, no, it's completely unacceptable. I think, though, and one thing I did want to mention, because it is near and dear important to my heart, is the Cleveland Guardians. Now, obviously, the Yankees are definitely licking their wounds. They're feeling sad. But I think if there's anyone out there who deserves to feel bad about the current situation, it's got to be the Cleveland Guardians. I'm not saying that they could walk into L.A. and sweep, but the Yankees put up almost zero fight the entire series, and I guarantee you guys like Jose Ramirez and the rest of the Guardians are sitting at home thinking, man, we could do better than this, and I'm sure they could have.
Yeah, you saw, like, you know, the Mets, even another New York team, put much more of a fight up against the Dodgers in their series, and to see, like, again, like the Yankees just kind of rolled over, like they just didn't really have anything going on. They won that one game, but like even then you didn't really, like, you, like, it was 3-0 Dodgers. You almost expected the sweep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, throughout the series, they just looked very lifeless, or just couldn't really see that much, like, fire when they were playing.
No, they had nothing. It kind of begs the question, what was kind of going on?
Yeah.
Maybe that first game, Freeman heroics, just like, maybe just completely killed that team. It was like Old Yeller taken out in the back. Like,
well, it absolutely is hard to come back, and you see it, like, the farther back in a series you go, just the harder it is to climb back up. But I think what really, to me, just illustrates the complete Yankees failure in this World Series was that fifth inning in that last game. I don't care what game, I don't care if it's game one in April, I don't care if it's game five of the World Series, you cannot play that poor of defense, especially against a good Dodgers team that will burn you for it, that did burn them for it. And I, if I were a Yankees fan, that would make me the most upset out of any of this. Judge is a great player. He has been a great player. He will be a great player. But that kind of defense, that kind of inability or just uncare, I don't really know what it was.
Garrett Cole, too, not covering first base.
Absolutely. It's unacceptable at any level of professional baseball, especially in the World Series. Like, what are we doing?
That fifth inning was complete. Like, I've seen better infielding from, like, you know, House League Timbits, right? Green versus blue. I've seen better infielding than
absolutely.
World Series.
We had intramural baseball or softball tournaments up here at Laurentian. There was better infield defense there than there was in the World Series. It's sad to see, but it's true.
So we'll keep on for a couple minutes here. Do you have a caller, Zach? Is that happening or no?
I don't believe so.
No, okay, so we'll keep Jackson on here. Discussing the World Series final, of course, as baseball heads in offseason. We'll keep him on for a couple more minutes, of course. And we'll turn our attention more to the local team. And, of course, we talked about them last week, but now the offseason has started. For the Toronto Blue Jays, they're not changing Shapiro. They say they're not changing Atkins, they say. So what do those two especially need to do to try to put this team back to a respectable product on the field?
You know, that's a really good question, and I think the best thing they could do is get on their knees and pray. I really do. They have wheeled the same team out there over and over and over again, fixing some of the issues, but creating new ones every single time. And honestly, I think I'm a big fan of just blowing it all up. I think you trade away everyone over the age of 26 who has less than 2 years on a contract. Really, there is nothing to me. Maybe it's a bit pessimistic, but I just don't see the vision. Obviously, there is a vision because, like, these people have these jobs for a reason. Shapiro and Atkins have found success at some points with the Blue Jays and with other franchises. So they obviously know what they're doing. At least I like to think they do. I just don't see the vision, and I'm waiting for them to show me something.
You know who I miss? I miss John Gibbons.
I miss John Gibbons, too, every day.
Seeing him get thrown out of a game for sticking up for his players
Classic.
Just puts a smile on my face.
It does. And that was a manager who had fire, was smart in deployments, didn't really make a lot of mistakes, and didn't really, you know, didn't reach the grand goal of a World Series or even a finals appearance from. But that was really the last, I'd argue, the last, like, solid, good, dependable, you know, fan-liked manager from the Blue Jays. Since then, they've had a rotating cast, and I mean, the fans aren't liking the manager anymore. They're not liking the management anymore, and the people at the top. We all liked Alex Anthopoulos for a while, and then, of course, he left, went on to win a championship, of course, and the Blue Jays kind of been stuck in limbo since that era.
It definitely does set a precedent when you have that rotating door of coaches, though. I think Gibbons was great at what he did. Like you said, he fought for the boys. He wasn't letting you get away with things. If you were a manager and he wasn't happy, he'd tell you, you know? And I think that kind of not competitive edge, but that just edge in general definitely drove those 2015, 2016 Jays teams, when they were good, to be even better than they probably would have been otherwise. I think you get a guy like Charlie Montoyo, just had absolutely none of that. I think John Schneider's a little bit in between the two. He's definitely getting a little bit better at that as of late, but having that grit as a coach is definitely a big part of any professional sport, especially baseball. And I think they've definitely been lacking that for a while as well.
I definitely agree. And of course, how John Schneider, I mean, we were all calling for his head this past season, but he's still with the Blue Jays, of course, which is another interesting decision.
Absolutely. I think, and you're going to find it with any coach. I've always been like, yeah, no, the whole Berríos situation, the playoffs a few years ago, that was, there is absolutely no working around that. That was a mistake, and he should absolutely be held accountable for that.
That was
but
brutal.
I think coaching is one of those things where if you do like your job and you're well, then you'll be praised. But if you do the exact same thing and it doesn't work out, then you're damned, right? It's hard to say. And I think John Schneider has definitely made some really, really good calls in important situations. It's just the ones that he's made that didn't really work out just so happened to be in those really important situations that reflect poorly on him.
That's a great way to look at it, Jackson. We'll keep you on for about a minute here. Anything else you want to add during our baseball talk?
I think one thing that's important to get out to the people is if you are a Blue Jays fan, as much as it is pessimistic, you still got to remember, these are kids. You get guys like Bichette, you get guys like Guerrero. They're still kids. They're young. They have a lot of time to turn things around. Whether they will or not, who knows? But you got to remember that they are kids. They are people. And that's an important message, I think, that needs to be put out there more.
Awesome. Of course, baseball players, athletes are still people. Great call from Jackson Lee, our resident baseball analyst, of course, covering the World Series. Thanks, Jackson, for hopping on the call here. It's always exciting to hear it works, to be honest.
Absolutely. No, and thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Awesome.
Thanks, Jackson.
All right. So we'll hang up on Jackson there, of course, an old friend of mine, great baseball player and a great baseball analyst. And of course, we're heading to the last about 8 minutes of the program here, maybe a bit more. We shall see, of course. And Zach, what do you think of our new call-in feature?
Call-in feature is great. It's we had cool. A great baseball mind on the show, and Who doesn't love more insight?
We do. It's always fun, of course, calling in and having people who are familiar with sports to call in, of course. If you're listening live or listening on our recap, of course, you can have a chance to call in. You know, you can either email sports@radiolaurier.com or you can just shoot me a message on Instagram at Ian Mac Bailey, and we can try to organize you to call in, of course. We can't just, like, I'm not going to give my, because it's how the call in works. It's basically my phone just hooked into this soundboard and click some options and stuff like that. Then it goes through. I've got Zika. But yeah, shoot me a message, sports@radiolaurier.com or Instagram at Ian Mac Bailey. And then, you know, and then we can discuss there. I'll give you my phone number, and then you can call it. And so it'll be a lot of fun. And of course, past couple sports shows, past couple years, ever since I've been here, and ever since I think a bit before too, since any of the managers can't remember anyone ever using the call-in feature. So it's fun to kind of be the first one in a while to kind of integrate that into the show, and it'll be fun to keep going. And of course, I kind of lost my train of thought there. Zach, say something smart.
NFL trade deadline on the way. We've already had some moves with, of course, DeAndre Hopkins getting traded to the undefeated Chiefs. And he's already made an impact, already has a solid connection with Patrick Mahomes, has been looking pretty good so far, even though he's an older player. But it's good that he brings a veteran presence to that wide receiver room that's banged up with Rashee Rice is out. And he really plugs a big hole there as a more physical possession type receiver. And dynamic receiver Diontae Johnson getting traded to the Baltimore Ravens for a bag of chips. And he's a great deep threat, and he's been very consistent throughout his career. And he's very lucky to be getting away from the poverty Carolina Panthers after only half a season. I bet he was missing the Steelers for a while he was down in Carolina. Of course, with Bryce Young, who got benched earlier this season, and the Red Rocket, Andy Dalton. And he should be looking for a fresh start in Baltimore, and he'll probably find success because that offense has been hitting on all cylinders. He's probably going to be looking at not a lot of safety help up top because they're very concerned in the box with Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson running all over him. So he should have some opportunities to catch some deep balls, which is what Diontae Johnson is very, very good at.
Definitely. And of course, you mentioned the impoverished Carolina Panthers. Of course, 1-7 on the season.
Good. Ridiculous.
For last in the NFC. And of course, you mentioned undefeated Chiefs. 7-0 so far. And of course, the reigning champions.
Yep.
Of course, the Kansas City Chiefs. And of course, I saw the Jets last night were playing. That final came in last
big
night.
Big upset.
21-13 against the Houston Texans.
Yeah, with a ridiculous catch by Garrett Wilson in the back of the end
zone. Highlight reel.
Yeah, he made his body into the Jordan Jumpman logo to catch that ball.
And of course, the Jets now with that win work their way up to 3-6. Of course, in the AFC East, of course, headed by the most geographically close to us, of course, the Buffalo Bills. A lot of Bills fans. I've seen their jerseys around campus, of course. And, of course, going down the AFC, West, of course, headed by the Chiefs. AFC North, headed by the Pittsburgh Steelers. AFC South, of course, succumbing to the Jets last night, were the Texans. They're on the NFC side. The Washington Commanders are leading the East Division there.
Led by Jaden Daniels, rookie quarterback who's been looking fantastic. An amazing deep ball. He's a weapon in the design run game, and he's looked very comfortable so far.
For the NFC West, a three-way tie for first out of the four teams there. The Cardinals, 49ers, and my team, the Seattle Seahawks, all tied at 4-4. And not far behind are the LA Rams at 3-4. And, of course, the North, NFC North, the Lions, 6-1, Packers, 6-2. And then, of course, NFC South bottomed out by the Carolina Panthers at 1-7, and topped out by the Falcons at 6-3, with the Bucs 4-4 just behind them in the NFC South. For the NFL, as of course you mentioned, the trade deadline,
yep,
is approaching. When is that?
It is approaching. I believe it is the start of Week 9, so it should be in a couple days.
Awesome. And of course, big as we get into November, sports really start ramping up.
Yeah.
Here on campus, professionally too. Of course, that's when the basketball and hockey seasons, you know, exit out of the first month and really start getting ramped, and you start to see who will be the good teams, who will be the bad teams, kind of they start to spread out. Of course, NFL is quite underway, of course, in the deadline mid-season. At the start of the month. MLB, of course, finally ends in the World Series, which will be a talking point for a while, especially that wild meltdown from the Yankees there in the fifth inning in a slew of three errors and infield gaffes in that fifth inning, plus their bats just not batting. And then, of course, we mentioned on campus for the Golden Hawks, of course. We've got women's hockey last night, Halloween nights, OUA football semifinals featuring the number two national-ranked Laurier Golden Hawks on Saturday at 1 p.m. That's a home game, so make sure you get your tickets. And we, of course, have the men's and women's basketball home openers tonight. And then they also play tomorrow night, so their first two games of the season here on campus there at the Athletic Complex Gym. Zach is calling one of them tonight.
6 p.m.
The women's game, of course, against U Ottawa Garnet and Grays, the GGs.
The Garnet and Grays.
And then women's hockey, of course, has a pair of home games next week. Me and Mateo Beckles will be on that call, which is fun. I think I'm also calling a pair of games tomorrow for basketball, which I haven't done basketball in a while. So that'll be interesting. But, of course, and then we have Kevin Johnson and I think Bernavan are doing the play-by-play for basketball tomorrow night. So it'll be a sports team night tomorrow at the Athletic Complex as some of us get in the action of calling the games. I'm going to look over my notes here. Anything I missed? If you mean my notes, I just listed down all the fun holidays it was today. Again, of course, just to recap that, if you missed the top of the show, today is not only continuing Halloween and Diwali celebrations. We have All Saints Day, of course, is today, or the day after Halloween, November 1st. It's Antigua and Barbuda's Independence Day. Shout out them, of course, getting away from the arms of Britain. But, of course, I think they're still part of the Commonwealth. National Sports Fan Day. Woo, that's us. Yes, Deep Fried Clams Day. Maybe I have to have one.
Yeah.
Sure. It's also national. I didn't put this on my list. But it's also National Brush Day.
Brush.
As in, like, not as in, like, physical, like, you know, oil brushes or, like, brooms, but as in, like, toothbrushes. Because it's the day after Halloween.
Right, all the candy.
They're trying to promote healthy oral hygiene.
Say thank you to your toothbrush before you go to bed tonight.
Make sure you kiss it goodnight.
Yeah.
Love your lawyer day. Lawyers, don't like them.
Shout out to everybody in law school right now.
My roommate's going to law school. He wants to be a judge, not a lawyer, so I gave him a pass.
Yeah.
World Vegan Day is also today. So if you're a vegan, I guess this is your 4th of July. I don't know.
Sorry, whose Independence Day did you say?
Antigua and Barbuda.
Oh.
Which is a great destination for vacations, too.
Ever been?
No, never been, but of course, never. I get lonely and look up vacation rates at night. It's good reviewed, of course, anywhere in the Caribbean, really.
Right.
Outside of, like, you know, Haiti. This was pretty good.
Yeah.
I've been to Cuba, though.
Yeah? How was that?
Cuba was really good. I enjoyed Cuba. Of course, you kind of stay on the resort in Cuba.
Mm-hmm. Where in Cuba?
Veradero.
Veradero, yeah. So that's where most of the resorts are.
That's a big tourist town. Of course, a lot of Canadians go there too. Mm-hmm. Of course, Canadians in Cuba. Yeah. It's strange because, you know, Americans in Cuba, they've had that embargo for years. And, you know, there's Cuba's kind of, you know, Cuban missile crisis and all that.
Yeah.
But just north of the border, Cubans love Canadians. Canadians love Cubans. Mm-hmm. So it's great, great down there.
Shout out to all you Cubans listening.
Shout out Cuba. And on that note, we'll just end off here. Make sure to get tickets for football semifinals tomorrow, home game. Queens Gales against your Laurier Golden Hawks for a ticket to the Yates Cup Finals of OUA Football Championship. Of course, that's tomorrow, 1 p.m. Saturday. And, of course, home openers on women's and men's basketball fronts tonight, 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. here on campus, Athletic Complex Gym. So there's really no reason not to go. Hopefully, you celebrated Halloween responsibly and maturely. And if you're still celebrating Halloween weekends, here in Waterloo, or anywhere you are, make sure you are, again, celebrating responsibly and mature, but we're also, like, all adults here, so hopefully you guys can make that decision for yourselves. If you can't, Darwinism. All right.
The strongest survive.
Thank you for listening in to Golden Bowl. That was a fun episode for Zach. I'm Ian. Thanks for listening. And until next week, have a good Friday.